And we'll proceed to the second case, the United States versus Hrabowski.
May it please the court. Good morning, Judge Flom. Good morning, Judge Coffey, and good morning, Judge Williams. My name is Daniel Martin. I'm a staff attorney with the Federal Defender Program, and I was appointed following the trial of Patrick Hrabowski to represent him in his sentencing and all subsequent matters, including this appeal before the Seventh Circuit. Your Honors, the argument we've raised is a simple one. The evidence below was insufficient as a matter of law to prove Mr. Hrabowski's guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. We understand that the burden we face is a formidable one, but as we've indicated in our filings, it is certainly not an impossible standard. And we urge that in this case, it is imperative for the court to closely examine the testimony of both Officer Dwayne Wheeler of the Maywood Police Department and Mr. August Palmer, the occurrence witness, and reach a determination that the evidence was simply insufficient here. Not only is Officer Wheeler's testimony incredible on its face, impossible for him to observe what he described, but when contrasted with the testimony of Mr. Palmer, it is contradicted even further. And Judge, by and large, through the course of trials, I am well aware, as this court is, that if the jury has a chance to hear the evidence and a jury has a chance to hear these arguments, that that's generally as far as it will go. But we do have this standard, and it does exist, and it does exist for a reason. In this instance, Patrick Hrabowski is serving in excess of 260 months in jail based upon the incredible testimony of a police officer who claimed that he was observing Mr. Hrabowski from almost a full block away using binoculars at precisely the time Mr. Palmer descends the stairway at 1008 North Orchard in Maywood and hands him a stack of clothing. Now, Palmer, who had his own flaws as a witness, Your Honors, never indicates that there is the presence, the visible presence of any gun visible to any eye at the time he hands, the very brief time he hands these clothes to Mr. Hrabowski. And yet, Officer Wheeler, almost a full block away, claims that he, at that moment, sees a gun protruding from the front pants pocket. But then everything that is done by Officer Wheeler thereafter, Judge Flom, Judge Williams, Judge Coffey, contradicts that testimony. Officer Wheeler has a brief moment before he goes on to the talk around dispatch, which cannot be heard by the dispatch operator or anyone monitoring the communications. Before he goes on that, he does issue a dispatch. Now, this is a police officer trained with a number of years of experience who tells a jury in this building that he sees a man he knows as a felon in possession of a gun getting into a car. A dangerous situation, one which at the very least would compel this officer to issue a warning to fellow officers as well as to the citizenry that there is a potential life-threatening situation. Instead, in completely contradictory form, Officer Wheeler simply indicates Peter Hrabowski is jumping into a car on me. That's the public testimony. That's the corroborating testimony that we have. While he later says that he gets on a talk-around dispatch and tells fellow officers that Hrabowski has a gun, there's no evidence in court to corroborate his claim. The only evidence to corroborate is actually directly and squarely contradictory.
Now, which claim is the one you feel that is without corroboration, Mr. Martin? identifying... The defendant with a gun? Is that it?
Yes. The identifying Mr. Hrabowski with a gun, which Officer Wheeler claims he sees at the time Mr. Hrabowski gets into the automobile. That's what he says later gives rise to the stop. That's the claim that we believe is unsupported, Judge. Now, he claims he sees that gun while watching binoculars. That's the gun that Palmer says is not facing the public. And simultaneous to his observations, Judge Flom, that he sees the butt of a gun, which I submit is very small, from almost a block away, he's observing the car into which Mr. Hrabowski gets in. And he is inaccurate. He inaccurately observes the make of the car, the model of the car, the color of the car, and the license plate of the car. On every additional corroborative issue with respect to what he's observing and how he's able to observe it, he is dead wrong. He is contradictory. And I submit that on that basis, it is physically impossible for him to observe what he described he observed. The only other testimony in the case, and admittedly, shaky though it was, I'm not vouching for August Palmer as a witness. In fact, I believe that we have urged that his testimony standing alone was equally incredible. I'm not vouching for that in any event. But Palmer never indicated that he did anything except walk out of that apartment with a stack of clothes. And contrary to the recitations that Patrick Hrabowski instructed Palmer to get his thing or get his gun, all that was borne out at the trial by August Palmer was that Patrick Hrabowski said, go in and get my clothes. I'm going to a baptism, and I need to get dressed. Now, prior to that, earlier, in a grand jury testimony under oath, August Palmer did indicate additional information, which we believe was simply, it wasn't that his trial testimony was more favorable. It was that he was simply unable to keep it straight from one proceeding to another. And I don't want to rehash what we've noted, because I know the court realizes that Mr. Palmer was a longtime heroin addict, in all likelihood was under the influence of heroin, not only at the time the occurrence took place, but at the time he testified before the grand jury, because he admitted, or was forced to admit, one or the other, that just the evening prior to giving that testimony in court, under oath, in the grand jury, he ingested heroin again. He was an individual, Your Honors, following the stop and the arrest of the car.
Counsel, did you read the government's brief?
I did read the government's brief,
Judge Coffey. Is the information contained therein regarding the officer's observation when talking to the other officer over the phone of the gun in the man's pants as he handed him over, long before he even came upon the defendant, is that inaccurate? Saying that it's on page 29 and 30?
Your Honor, that information regarding the phone is something that takes place after Officer Wheeler indicates that he is standing in front of the car. It doesn't take place prior to the time.
No, it says using binoculars, Officer Wheeler watched as Palmer handed the defendant a pair of pants.
I disagree with that.
With the guns? Well, I'm sorry. I just asked you if this was inaccurate. Knowing that the defendant was a convicted felon, Wheeler then radioed the dispatch for a backup assistant and began following the defendant's vehicle. It was long before he even came upon him. He gave this information to the other officer that he saw the gun sticking out of the car. And I ask you, is that inaccurate?
It is our position, Judge, that that is clearly an inaccurate recitation of the testimony, not by the government, but from Officer Wheeler. I'm not saying the government is misstating what Wheeler says, but I'm saying what Wheeler says is inaccurate as to what actually transpired.
Well, this is in the government's brief.
Yes, it is.
That he said it, and that it is recorded on pages 24 through 30.
That testimony itself, those words are not recorded on any document, Judge, that set forth...
Then you don't challenge what's in the brief.
I do challenge that, Your Honor. I absolutely challenge that.
But you challenge it in what way?
I challenge the veracity of what Officer Wheeler says took place at that time. I challenge his testimony, Your Honor, that he communicated to a fellow officer or officers that he saw the presence of a gun at 1008 Orchard.
I don't know about 1008 Orchard. That is not in what I've read.
Judge Coffey, the government's brief is reciting Officer Wheeler's testimony. There is no independent corroboration of that testimony. In other words, there was no transcript of that transmission. There's no verification of
now
that.
Now we're on something else. There's no independent corroboration.
Of what
I
Wheeler
said.
Is
it inaccurate that the officer said that to the other officer before he had even made the arrest?
That may have been his testimony, but it's our position that he did not actually say that
well,
to
now
that
you're
officer.
Saying that may have been his testimony.
Mr. Martin, at what point, accepting for a moment your position that he didn't, there's no corroboration of an initial reference to a gun, Does he make it subsequently, Officer Wheeler, to the other officers that there's a gun?
There's no public testimony. There's no public recitation. There's no public conveyance to the officers at large that there's the existence of a gun. Wheeler claims he is speaking on a bandwidth
right.
that is not able to be heard by anyone other than certain select officers. So his testimony is, yes, I eventually conveyed to them that there was a gun to these officers. But it's been our position and maintains our position that flies in the face of reality, that for him not to have communicated to his dispatch that there was a dangerous situation, not only to officers who may come across this car, but to the citizenry, flies in the face of reality.
Well, Wheeler does call for backup, though, right? You're not challenging that, are you?
Curiously, though, Judge Flom, he calls for backup on what he terms to be a traffic stop. Again, he has a chance to talk about the existence of a gun, and the backup he sends for, Judge Flom, is for a traffic stop for an expired plate on that car. Again, no reference to the vitally significant piece of testimony, the gun.
He said that he had seen the gun, and he told the other officer that. That's why he called for a backup. Because the individual was armed. That's long before he came upon him.
Well, when you said long before he came upon him, he was observing, he claimed, through
right.
these binoculars. And then he claims that he conveyed some information through this bandwidth that could not be heard. But he also conveyed to his dispatcher a message. And that message, in its entirety, was, Peter Hrabowski is getting into a car on me. I do notice that my red light is on. I thank your honors for your attention and respectfully request that the court review and reverse this case.
Thank you, Mr. Martin.
Thank you, your honors.
Ms. Perry.
Good morning. May it please the court and opposing counsel. What the appellant is asking this court to do is to reweigh the witness credibility and to reweigh the evidence, and that is simply not the court's function. To do this, the appellant points to several alleged inconsistencies in the testimony. And first of all, as we pointed out in our brief, many of those are not inconsistencies at all, but simply misstatements of the facts. With respect to the oral argument today, once again, counsel stated that it was uncorroborated that one of the officers called for backup assistance and said there was a gun. First of all, Officer Wheeler testified that he used the talk-around frequency to call for backup and to tell the other officers that there was a gun. Officer Wheeler stated that he used the talk-around frequency because this is a frequency that cannot be monitored by police scanners and because this is a frequency that does not get interrupted by the other dispatch traffic. This testimony was corroborated by two other officers at trial, both Officer Peck and Officer Dent testified that Officer Wheeler did radio on the talk-around frequency and told them that a gun was in a pair of pants in the car. Because of this, all three officers got out of their cars when they pulled over the defendant's car with their guns drawn. All three officers testified at trial that they would not have done this unless they believed a gun to be present at the scene, that they were treating this as a felony traffic stop because they thought a weapon was present and that they were in danger. All of that is corroborated by the other witnesses who were in the car, who said that the officers did immediately pull the car over with their guns drawn. And finally, all of Officer Wheeler's and August Palmer's observations were corroborated by the fact that a gun was indeed found in a pair of the defendant's pants. With respect to appellant's argument today, that Palmer never indicated the presence of a visible gun during his testimony. That simply is not true. Palmer testified at trial that when he went down to the defendant's bedroom at 1008 Orchard to get the defendant's pants, he picked up a stack of clothing, that the pants were in that stack of clothing, and that he both saw and felt the defendant's gun, which, as August Palmer testified, the defendant referred to as his baby. And as he was carrying that stack of clothing out, Officer Wheeler indeed saw that same gun that August Palmer had seen. It is corroborated that the gun was visible both by August Palmer as well as the fact that the gun was then found in a pair of pants. It therefore was not impossible for Officer Wheeler to observe what he said he saw. And in fact, all of the other supporting facts corroborate this. There was a gun found at the defendant's feet in a pair of the defendant's pants. It was the same gun that two witnesses observed the defendant carrying, and indeed that August Palmer said he knew to be defendant's gun based on the fact that he had seen him carry it 10 to 20 times within the past week. Because of this, the evidence, when viewed in the light most favorable to the government and taking all reasonable inferences in favor of the government, clearly shows that a rational jury could have found the defendant guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. If there are no questions from the panel, we therefore ask that the defendant, Patrick Kabrowski's conviction and sentence be affirmed.
Thank you, Ms. Perry. Mr. Martin, your time has expired, but you may have a minute. And I wonder if you would comment on Ms. Perry's representation that the other two officers corroborated the alleged statement from Wheeler about the gun.
Your Honor, the other two officers may have indicated that that was something that they were aware of after the fact, but there was no corroborating evidence. There was no supporting corroborating evidence to verify what Officer Wheeler says he said on that around bandwidth.
Well, perhaps I'm not tracking this. The other officers who testified at trial, did they testify that Wheeler had communicated the fact that a gun was in the possession of Hrabowski?
Something to that effect. But well, that was, again, on the private communication that no one else was privy to, Judge. I understand that there may have been two or three others who corroborated that. It is our testimony, though, that the statements that were made on the bandwidth that was accessible.
So it's just the absence of any recordation that you suggest makes the case so weak.
It's the absence of recordation and the fact that the contrary behavior of the officer who claims to have observed the gun is completely incongruent with his having seen what he claimed to have seen.
Well, my question took up your minute. Did you want to make any other comment?
Judge, with respect to the testimony of August Palmer, I do commend it to the court. While he may have said that when he went into the house, he felt and saw a gun, there was absolutely no indication from August Palmer that that gun was in any way visible when he got out on the streets, thereby rendering it impossible for Officer Wheeler to have observed with binoculars or any other means. And I thank you again for giving me that additional time.
Thank you, Mr. Martin. Thank you, Ms. Perry. The case is taken under advisement.